This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
This is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. In the studio here on Broad Street with Sean Nestor, who recently ran for city council in Toledo, and he also happens to be a Green, a party that's being thrown off the ballot here in Ohio. So he could be a man without a party. Sean, welcome to The Other Side of the News.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So what'd you learn from running as a third-party candidate in Toledo as a Green?
You know, it was kind of a mix. I was really surprised that some of the ideas I thought, you know, how people would approach me were not quite what I anticipated. You know, one of the things is Greens are often thought to be, you know, marginal fringe candidates. But by the end of the election cycle, I'd been endorsed by three labor unions, including the local police union and the firefighters union.
I thought unions hated Greens.
Yeah, apparently that's not quite the case. I kind of went into those. And in fact, I remember with the police union, which I thought was going to be a bit iffy. You know, I sat down at this table full of probably about 9 or 10 of the guys who helped run the police union, and they each kind of started asking questions. The second or third guy goes, "Well, I don't know much about the Green Party, but as I understand, they're sort of the opinion that government's too big and they're concerned about surveillance and Big Brother. And I notice on your website that you have on your platform that you want to call an investigation into the effectiveness of the surveillance cameras we've been putting around town. Would you like to speak to that?" And I thought, oh, well, here we go. You know, they've kind of already maybe come out against mm-hmm. me. But, you know, I spoke to them, and I had researched the point quite well. I said, well, I think it's a matter of effectiveness and whether we're getting our bang for our buck here. There's going to be abuses of those cameras. That's a given. But it has to be whether or not we're actually getting, if it's significantly reducing crime, and if so, over the long term. We had a really fruitful conversation. And by the end of it, the last few guys said, no, you've answered every question we've got. I get a call back the 2 days later. The president of the union, Dan Wagner, says to me, I wanted to let you know you have our endorsement. You have our full support. And we'd like to help you out in any way that we can. He also said on a personal note that he'd been doing the screenings for about 8 years and that I was about one of the best candidates they've ever interviewed. I was really taken aback by that. I didn't know that, you know, I'd come out critical against the position they were taking, but because I was thoughtful and respectful in the dialogue, they said, you know, this guy's really thinking about stuff and we think he's a good guy. And I got their support. That also landed me, I think, by proxy, the firefighters' union support. I ended up interviewing with them, even though I had missed a deadline to do it originally. And after interviewing with them, they granted me the endorsement as well. I also got the endorsement of UFCW 75 and the local newspaper of record, the Toledo Blade. So I got a lot of this mainstream support just by speaking the truth and being an honest guy. And I think a lot of times going in as a Green, you assume that there are prejudices that are just out there no matter what that you can't fight against. But that turned out to be not always the case.
Well, what was your agenda, right? Because you're a Green. You've got these core values. How do you actually apply those to a city like Toledo, which just the name doesn't sound like it's inherently a Green. It's more of a gritty labor town, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so. It's an industrial mecca, or at least it once was. And one of the ways I applied the 10 key values of the Green Party was in my support for the creation of a new zoning law mm-hmm. or a zoning designation that would create community gardens, urban agriculture, and green spaces in the same vein of what they've done in Cleveland under our Green Councilman Brian Cummins. So I was pushing for that and saying, you know, maybe we can look to some alternative ways of being self-sustaining, not as dependent on the corporate agriculture business, and start doing our own gardening and community support. One of the good ways to address blight in some of these neighborhoods is to have community gardens that are being tended to and taken care of by residents. And that was something that we found is in growing popularity among schools, churches, and just interested community members. And I wanted to help provide some support for those who were trying to do it through the creation of that zoning law. So that was just one example of how we could take some of the environmental concerns of the party and translate it into something that benefits the city on a strictly municipal level.
When I ran for governor as an independent endorsed by the Greens, when I was in the Toledo area, there was a warehouse area where they were sort of bragging to me, local officials, that they'd done geothermal there, which made those warehouses actually habitable as art studios and spaces had they not approached it that way. Are there ways to do sort of alternative energy developments that's sustainable in some of these old industrial cities?
Oh, definitely. One of the things that I'd like to push for us to do more of are something under the PACE program, which is the Property Assessed Clean Energy System that I think originally may have been a federal program that trickled down through the states. And I believe we have it active in Lucas County, but we're pretty much limiting it to commercial and we're not really pursuing its use in residential properties. There has been somewhat of a renaissance in the downtown area with a lot of those big buildings. The apartment, a lot of them are old warehouses that are being renovated and turned into apartment complexes. And when possible, we have had the benefit of installing solar panels, solar fields, and that's due to the fact that we have a couple solar companies based in the area, including First Solar and Sunlight. So we've benefited from that kind of regional proximity.
Now, Toledo itself, that's on the water. It's Lake Erie, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
What about wind? There's always been talk of this, world-class wind that swirls in, often bringing in snow to places like Toledo. Any possibility of wind power there?
There's possibility, but you have right now, it's kind of curious, the big argument going across everywhere, as far as I can tell, is that the damage it does with birds. And there is a high school, actually, I think it's Clay High School. It's actually, I think, out in the suburbs right around Toledo, mm-hmm. where they actually got a large-scale windmill or wind generator put up that is generating all the power for the school, minus a very, very small amount. And that's been championed by a guy named Dennis Slotnick, who's an instructor there. It's been active now for a couple years, and it's been a resounding success. Why the local officials there have not taken a closer look at how we can start applying that to other public properties like schools, libraries, and government buildings, I don't know. That would have been one of the things I would have pursued had I been elected to city council, is really trying to push how we can pursue that for energy independence and greater self-sustainability within the economically depressed region that we reside.
All right. What else was on your agenda when you were running for city council in Toledo?
Well, actually, one of the things was a real bread and butter issue dealing with the replacement of the sewer system. We actually have, like in many cases across the Midwest, a crumbling infrastructure system that's been completely ignored for decades upon decades. We've been kicking the can down the road on our water treatment facility, on the sewers that are underneath our streets, and in many cases the streets themselves. So we don't really do water runoff properly. Some of those sewers are literally made of wood insulated with tar that's been around for about 150 years. A couple years ago, they're numbered by when they were created, and sewer number one collapsed. They had to send a guy down there in a scuba suit to try to clear out the rubble. And I don't know what the exact cost off the top of my head is, but I know we've been spending a lot of money in emergency repairs on infrastructure that could have been intelligently avoided had we been taking care of this infrastructure all along. So I was talking from a bread and butter issue of taking care of the city and really thinking long term. One of the 10 key values of the Green Party is future focus and sustainability. And the future focus is something I think we've lost quite a bit on every level of government. It's always about short-term gain at the expense of long-term sustainability. And by trying to do better with our infrastructure through the sewers, through the roads, and through our water treatment facility, I thought that we could make this a good place for people to grow up and to retire in, because right now it's questionable what state the city is going to be in 20, 30 years, when even more of these sewers are collapsing, when budgets continue to be crunched, when the austerity agenda of our state government continues to persist. So in the face of all that, I was trying to find a voice of sanity in saying, this may not be the sexiest issue out there, but it's crucial to the day-to-day lives of what we need to do.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to grab a whole lot of... Did you have a sexier issue that went along with the bread and butter?
In a way, I tried to avoid being too sensational because I didn't want to be pigeonholed the way I knew a lot of people would off the top of their head as being a fringe candidate or a guy with a lot of highfalutin ideals. I did have some, but I wanted to keep those in my back pocket. So, for example... One of the things I think we could be doing more is, for example, passing a resolution in favor of the marijuana legalization initiatives that are going on inside of Ohio. I know that there are some initiatives going on right now.
Run out of this very complex.
Yeah, I mean...
We're not here now, so it's okay.
And these are issues that are, you know, as soon as you start talking about marijuana... There's like a knee-jerk reaction. There's a group of people who instantly shut off and stereotype you. One of the local bars, for example, was doing a candidates night for the city council and mayoral candidates. I went to it, and somebody in the audience asked about medical marijuana and where I stood on it. I said, I absolutely support medical marijuana, and I think we need to be more proactively pursuing laws that are dismantling...
Just keeping people in Toledo and from crossing the border into Michigan.
Exactly.
To be treated medically. I mean, you're on the border right there, right?
Exactly. And I mean, this is a trend that I think now that a few states have started to, and even municipalities are pushing back on this, I see that, you know, this is a good opportunity for us to join in and be a leader of the pack instead of a constant follower, the way we often are in Toledo. And the there was a sort of a Twitter explosion that came from that, where a handful of local pundits were really rubbing in, oh, the Green Party guy supports weed, of course. And it was, you know, reduced to a base kind of a juvenile thing, which is laughable. But at the same time, these are serious issues for some
people. And a majority of people in Ohio, in poll after poll, support medical marijuana.
Exactly. But it's the fact that we get this media dialogue that gets reduced down to such a low level. And that was sad to me to witness. And I just said, I had to tweet back something like, keep it classy. And later said, you know, this is a serious issue. And the truth is, and this is true, I have never even taken a hit off of marijuana or even nicotine. I'm clean as they come. And it was always...
But you would wear or eat hemp cereal.
Yes, I would.
Because one of the interesting things, I mean, you wouldn't smoke marijuana, or you haven't smoked marijuana. But the one in Ohio also has the industrial use of hemp, which would probably have implications for industry in a place like Toledo that can do manufacturing. I mean, there's numerous hemp projects. So that's why I, as one of the people who helped write the initiative, I've in many ways been more excited about the hemp aspect of it than the medical marijuana.
Well, yeah, and you think about how this can help industry. I mean, the number one mantra that you hear repeated time and time again is jobs, jobs, jobs. But when it comes to a common sense issue that helps to address things like racism and poverty and the prison industrial complex, while at the same time helping us with those jobs and employment and sustainability, I mean, it just makes so much sense to start pursuing these policies now instead of keeping them relegated to this status of low-level, juvenile, ha-ha, you know, kind of dialogue. And, you know, even just in having a serious back and forth that lasted no longer than 30 seconds, it got blown out into sort of a kerfluffle. And I was trying to avoid, when I had media appearances on television or with The Blade or whoever, I didn't bring that issue up because I knew that it was something that would be taken that way, and I didn't want to be dismissed or marginalized or pigeonholed. And so I had to kind of delicately, you know, walk that line.
But when you talked to the police and they brought up surveillance, how would you stand on something like Bill of Rights enforcement zones? As a council member, really, it's the people of the city that own the police. And many of these people have now been working with the federal government, the NSA, and in many cases compromised. Gannett did a tremendous story last week showing that a lot of that technology used by the NSA for surveillance against terrorists is now moving down to the local level. What's your position there? And we'll hear about his position once we announce that this is WCRS 98.3 102.1, bringing you the other side of the news. So what say you on that, Mr. Nestor?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you point that out, because it's not just the surveillance technology that's been trickling down to the local
level. And you're an IT guy.
Yeah, and that's one of the angles I push, is that I said, look, you know, I've worked in IT for a long time, and I understand that people stroll in and they really exploit the fact that the decision makers aren't technologically savvy. Mm-hmm. They promise them the moon. They say, look, this is computers. Don't ask how it works. It just works. And it sounds cool, and it sounds like something you can repeat to the public. But, you know, there is no silver bullet when it comes to the issue of crime, and the surveillance cameras are packaged as such incorrectly. I think that when we talk about Bill of Rights zones, I think I would support that 100%. You know, the current trend of free speech zones, which is comic, you know, really
usually a free speech cage, as I recall the one I've encountered.
Yeah, and it speaks to how the constitutional rights have been twisted. In Toledo, back in 2005, we had some riots related to some neo-Nazi protesters coming to town and the police protecting them. And there was an anti-racist march scheduled to kind of counter that for about a month later. And the city council in Toledo at that time passed an ordinance declaring that on the day that that anti-racist action march was scheduled to take place, no two people could be in public together between the hours of, you know, X and Y. A clear violation of constitutional rights that was still passed by our local city council. Now, that people obviously proceeded with the demonstration, and about 24 young people were corralled and arrested and defended by Terry Lodge out there. And, of course, he ended up winning, but it was just a clear miscarriage of justice. And, you know, it just talks to the level of, you know, Bill of Rights and the whole idea of constitutional rights have been completely turned on their head in this era, and there needs to be constant vigilance to those abuses. And the other thing I did want to touch on was it's not just the surveillance cameras that are trickling down to the local level, as you well know, but we've also been seeing that city governments are getting handed down spare tanks and, you know, armor penetration.
Some are pushing for drones.
Yeah, I mean, because this is pretty much what's left over that the military didn't want, an overproduced sale, which is a scary proposition to think about. The militarization of our police should be something that we are all concerned about. And fortunately, Toledo hasn't gone too far down that path, and I hope to use the relationship I've built with the police department to be a voice of sanity in that regard.
So one of the things, you're a Green, you've identified yourself as such, even though you ran an election, I assume, was it partisan or nonpartisan?
It was a nonpartisan race.
Nonpartisan race, but what about the decision here at the state level to completely eliminate your party?
Well, you know, that strikes me on a personal level, because I feel like it's such an affront to what it means to be involved with the electoral process. The reality is that if it wasn't for the Green Party, I probably wouldn't be involved with electoral politics, because I, like many people, would feel that my options being arbitrarily narrowed to a handful of pre-selected candidates by mainstream elites and those in power, those with wealth, the special interest groups, I can't participate in a system like that with good conscience. The possibility of third parties taking hold through the development of a proportional representation system is something that I think has to happen, difficult though it may be. And I believe that running for office as a Green Party candidate to raise awareness of those alternatives and the need to start getting real reform in the way we handle our elections is it's critical, and it's crucial for our democracy, which has been completely whittled away over the years. This latest law that's passed is just the latest in a long string of attacks on the existence of our party, which we've had to fight tooth and nail for, only having ballot access now in the state for about 3 years. And this is the second or third time that they've actually passed a law that essentially eliminated us, but we've had to fight for it. And a lot of people, when they hear about it, go, wow, this is just absolutely insane. How do you, they develop the empathy of what it means, because when you ask people, they do want choices. I mean, one of the, I guess, upsides of a consumer economy is the fact that, well, people like choices, and we should be giving them in the form of multiple choices for political parties, which ostensibly stand for different sets of political values. You can't give me a nation as large a landmass with as great cultural diversity as the United States and tell me that all of the political viewpoints can be funneled into one of two choices on every level of government and every branch of government. It just doesn't make sense. And people know that. They know it in their hearts. And as long as we have a voice, as long as we have ballot access, as long as we have a fighting chance to present our case and present our viewpoint, I think we're going to continue to grow. And this latest effort is just an attempt to stonewall us, and it's not going to work. I'm going to continue to be involved with electoral politics. I'm going to continue to fight for ballot access, whether we have it at the moment or not. And I think that I would urge anybody who cares about their democracy, whether they identify as a Green or Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Socialist, Constitution Party, to pay attention to what's going on regarding the state laws and our fight to be heard.
Now, one of the issues that we talked about prior to the show, you mentioned that the right to choose, that is, the right to have an abortion, may be endangered in the Toledo area. What can you tell the listeners to the other side of the news about that?
Well, there's been a longstanding law that very few people know about, which requires ambulatory services such as abortion clinics to have a transfer agreement to a large hospital network. Hospital networks these days are very large centralized organisms. They are not mom and pop doctors, and they are prone to the same corporate interests as any other political institution, which is incredibly sad. And these transfer agreements basically say that, you know, let's say somebody's on site in an abortion clinic, they have a heart attack, the abortion clinic's not, they're not able to take care of that, so they have to have a hospital that agrees to take them. It's a completely arbitrary agreement because hospitals have to take anybody who shows up anyway.
Yeah, that's what I can't figure out. It's like, don't you just take them to the nearest hospital?
That's
what they're going to do, turn them down because they're having a heart attack?
Exactly. I mean, that's why it's such an arbitrary law. Now, the reason it was created was actually to address the issue of patient dumping, where one hospital wouldn't want to take care of a particular patient, so they would try to dump them off in another hospital. It was designed to address that. But through this, organizations like Ohio Right to Life have placed pressure on private and public institutions to deny transfer agreements, and it's working. In Toledo, we had two abortion clinics. One has already closed its doors. The other has been notified that it is supposed to close its doors. It's asked for a public hearing, which is pending. And at this point, I understand that Cincinnati is in a similar situation, and through the I-75 corridor, we may lose our access to abortion. Now, there are 13...
So you're saying that a major city like Toledo is closing, one abortion clinic is already closed, and there's only one left, and it looks like it will close as well?
Yes. So a major metropolitan area will not have access to abortion services thanks to the underhanded laws that are being passed by our current state legislature and endorsed by our governor, John Kasich.
What do you mean? What would be these underhanded laws?
Well, the transfer agreement, for example, in the recent budget amendments that were passed back in June or July, they snuck in a law that said that you cannot, if you are a public institution, you can't provide a transfer agreement. So our local university hospital, UTMC, would therefore be barred. So that leaves a Catholic hospital, which obviously as a Catholic organization doesn't want to support it.
Now, let me get this right. If you're a public entity like the governor's office, which is a public entity, no public entity can have a transfer agreement? What's the logic there?
Well, it basically comes down to that people don't like the idea of their tax money going to in any way to anything that resembles abortion or what they feel would support abortion. So that goes back to, I forget, what are those laws called?
Why don't we just divide it? The majority, the 70% that's pro-abortion and 30%. So 30% of the facilities don't have to accept abortion transfers.
That would be a little more logical to
me. Because they're not giving abortions there, right? It's exactly. Like they're resurrecting somebody who's had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are you going to do? Let them die because they were in an abortion facility?
That's basically the logic. And that's the logic by which they are shutting down abortion clinics. The Hyde Amendments is what I was thinking of. And those are, you know, that's actually being challenged right now by the ACLU. I don't know if it'll be successful, but it's narrowed the options of who can actually issue a transfer agreement down. And it's part of an ongoing fight to eliminate what has been considered by the Supreme Court a constitutional right to privacy. We've had this for about 40 years, and it's being dismantled, and people barely even know about it. It's an emergency situation here in Ohio where we had 13 abortion clinics. We're down, and we may be looking at having only a handful across the entire state. And it's something that we definitely need to start organizing around.
And you're saying that John Kasich is involved in this?
Absolutely. He's been pressured by the moral majority type figures in his party who have leaned on him, knowing that they're single issue voters who will vote hand and knees over anybody who just says it comes out and supports pro-life measures. He's bowed to that. He's trying to court that vote. And in doing so, he's selling out every woman and every male that would be affected by access to abortion in this state. And it, you know, he's doing it because he understands that through the wheels of bureaucracy, few people will connect the dots and realize that this is an assault on a woman's right to choose.
Why isn't this a greater issue? I know one of the principles of the Green Party is to support women's rights, but this seems to be happening in a stealth manner, right? Totally under the radar.
Yeah, well, because it's such, you know, that's kind of how this has gotten to the stage it's at. It's that people know that it's a controversial issue, and it's just been sort of almost in polite society decided that we don't talk about abortion, that it's something for only a handful of people to be worried about. But the truth is, this has a tremendous impact on our lives, on the quality of our lives, on just the constitutional right to privacy, if for no other reason than that. This is such an affront to the values of our nation in terms of liberty and you know, the rights that we should have as citizens to dignity and the choice of our own fate. And I think that it has to be something that's done discreetly, because if it were made more public, there would be more outrage and these laws could not be passed, and the people supporting them would quickly rethink what they were doing.
What can be done to turn this around? I mean, we can talk about it on this show, The Other Side of the News, but what else do you think can be done to turn around this as a matter of public policy?
Well, we need to stop being afraid of talking about abortion and its value and why it's something that is important for us to have. As difficult as an issue as it is to talk about, it has to be talked about, and it has to be talked about now. We have to realize that this is something that is going to have a big impact on the way our society functions. And it has a very real impact on many of the people facing, for example, limited access to organizations like Planned Parenthood, which are out trying to provide birth control to people to have some say in their reproductive systems. What we need to be doing is talk about it, to start figuring out, educating ourselves, who are the people in power that are thinking they can get away with pushing this. We need to find out all the state legislators who are backing these laws and put a lot of pressure on them. Lynn Wachman out in Northwest Ohio, where I'm from, has been the key driver of this law. People should be harassing his office with phone calls and letters saying, I absolutely oppose you, especially people in that area, people who are his constituents. And we do need to start paying attention to on-the-ground organizing to help support the public opinion that women have a right to choose.
All right, that's Sean Nestor, Green Party candidate, Toledo, Ohio. I'm sure you'll be hearing from him in the future. Breaking news on the abortion crisis in Ohio. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news. Thanks a lot for being a guest, Sean.
Thanks for having me.